Scale with heart, human first, AI-forward systems that power profitable growth by Kevin M. Leonard, revised and expanded edition, copyright 2024, Kevin M. Leonard, all rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced, distributed, or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying, recording, or other electronic or mechanical methods, without the prior written permission of the author, except in the case of brief quotations embodied in critical reviews and certain other non-commercial uses permitted by copyright law. For more resources and information, visit scalewithheart.com.
About the author.
Kevin M. Leonard is a builder, operator, and executive with more than 20 years of experience across real estate, development, investing, mortgage, title, insurance, and home services. As president and COO, he has helped lead a multi-state organization of more than 2,000 sales professionals and employees across 60 locations, driving over $1.1 billion in service business growth. Kevin's work includes 7 bolt-on acquisitions and integrations, the design of operating systems for large service organizations, and the creation of leadership frameworks that turn strategy into repeatable execution. A self-taught entrepreneur who attended 4 universities and finished with a 2-year degree, he built his first company from scratch and has spent his career turning complexity into systems people can actually use. His approach, human first, AI forward, is designed to help business owners unlock freedom and profitability through systemized growth, people-powered leadership, and practical AI adoption. Since the first edition, Kevin created BOSS, the Business Operating Success System, a leadership development operating system built to turn management, recruiting, coaching, culture, planning, and execution into a repeatable cadence. He then created AI BOSS, the Artificial Intelligence Business Operating Success System, a continuous leadership operating system for AI adoption. Together, BOSS and AI BOSS reflect the core thesis of his work. Growth does not scale on motivation. It scales on systems that develop people and produce measurable outcomes. Above all, Kevin is a proud father. His sons, Parker and Beau, are his daily inspiration and the reason he leads with purpose, builds with discipline, and stays committed to legacy over ego.
Why I wrote this book. When you are on the side of the majority, it's time to pause and reflect. Mark Twain. That line has guided me through some of the biggest inflection points in my life. Because in business and in life, most people are sprinting without questioning whether they're running in the right direction. This book is about stepping back long enough to get clarity. Clarity on your business, your mindset, your priorities, clarity on what kind of life you're building and who you're building it for. AI automation is no longer optional. It is already reshaping the workforce, the way we lead, and the expectations inside every business. I believe there are 3 types of people in today's working world. Those who become super users of AI and automation. Those who are testing and learning, figuring it out as they go. Those who ignore it entirely and will have to compete against people who learn to use it well. This book is not about replacing people. It is about preparing them. I wrote this book for the business owner who is tired of chaos, for the leader who is ready to stop reacting and start designing. Most of all, I wrote it for my sons, Parker and Beau, so they grow up seeing that you can be driven and still be present. My wish for you, reading this book, is to take a pause and reflect, then wisely take action. A note for the second edition. The first edition made a promise: human first, AI forward. When I wrote it, that was a philosophy. In the 2 years since, it became a field test. I built a planning assistant and carried it to every office, moderated the AI conversation at our annual convention, and turned what we learned into an operating system with measured results. This edition keeps the argument and adds the proof. The 3 chapters at the end and the new tools in the workbook are what happened when I did what this book says. Chapter 1, Breakthrough or Breakdown. What growth reveals about your business. Growth is a spotlight. It doesn't hide your weaknesses, it magnifies them. When your business is small, grit and hustle can mask a lot of broken systems. But as soon as you start scaling, more clients, more team, more deliverables, what worked before stops working. Fast. You start leaking leads, missing deadlines, and burning out your best people. Not because your service or product is bad, but because your systems were never built to support scale. That's when you hit the tipping point. Some businesses break through, others break down. The difference isn't talent, it's infrastructure. Every leader eventually has to make a choice. Keep solving problems with time, energy, and people until you burn out. Or build systems that solve problems without you. If you want a breakthrough, structure must come before scale. And it starts with the way you think, not just the way you operate. Because the longer you delay building systems, the more fragile your success becomes. But when you lead with clarity and design your service or product to scale, you unlock margin, momentum, and freedom. This chapter is your permission slip to stop overfunctioning and start building something that runs without breaking the people inside it. Chapter 2, From Control to Clarity, The Shift Every Leader Must Make. You must learn to let go. Release the stress. You are never in control anyway. Steve Maraboli. Control feels like power. For most leaders, it's how you built everything, by being the decision maker, the closer, the fixer, the one who could just get it done. But as your business grows, the very thing that made you successful starts working against you. I learned this firsthand. I was leading a large organization with over 3,000 people, and each year we'd launch around 10,000 unique products. Each team member marketed their products in their own way. No brand consistency, no structure, just chaos. And this was before Canva or any of the slick, easy design tools we have now. So I built a system. Every new product got routed to a virtual assistant who designed the marketing materials using a clean on-brand template. That file was then delivered to the team member, ready to go. Simple, standardized, scalable. It took a mess and turned it into momentum. Morale improved, productivity went up, and most importantly, the team stopped depending on me for every decision. When everything depends on you, nothing scales. You become the ceiling of your company's potential. And here's the catch. Most leaders don't let go out of arrogance. They hold on out of fear. Fear that it won't be done right. Fear that things will fall apart. Fear that without control, value disappears. But the truth is, clarity creates more control than micromanagement ever could. Clarity of roles, clarity of systems, clarity of outcomes. When your team knows the vision, the playbook, and the metrics, they don't need to wait for your approval. They execute, they solve, they lead. And when you design your business to function without you in every room, you gain real power. The power to think, lead, grow, and breathe. This chapter is your challenge. Let go of the illusion of control and step into the clarity that makes scale possible. Chapter 3, The Business Can't Breathe Until You Do. You can't save others if you're suffocating yourself. Leadership starts with oxygen. Before every flight, the flight attendant gives the same instruction. If the oxygen masks drop, secure your own before helping others. It's a powerful metaphor and one most business owners ignore. Leaders often believe their job is to keep everyone else going, to lead from the front, to be the first one in, the last one out, and the one everyone turns to when the wheels start shaking. But here's the truth. If you can't breathe, your business can't either. As a leader, your time, energy, and clarity are the oxygen of the company. And yet, most leaders are operating with empty lungs, constantly reacting, constantly solving, constantly exhausted. A personal turning point. I've always put my sons first. My world revolves around them, not out of duty, but out of deep, unwavering love. I moved from the East Coast to the Midwest to try and save a bad marriage. I built a big house because it felt like the right thing to do for the family. I did what was best for everyone else, especially my boys, not necessarily what was best for me. And while that may sound noble, it left me depleted. I had nothing left to give myself. And eventually, I had nothing real to give anyone else either. Then I hit a point where everything started slipping, personally, emotionally, spiritually. And that's when a quote hit me like a punch to the chest. When you're on the side of the majority, it's time to pause and reflect. Mark Twain. I realized I had followed every rule people told me to follow. Put everyone first, be the rock, be the provider, but it was killing me inside. So I made a decision. I started putting the mask on myself first. Not because I stopped loving my boys, but because they deserve a dad who leads from overflow, not exhaustion. And that shift didn't just change me. It changed the way I build companies, the way I lead. Because the silent cost of burnout isn't just personal, it's organizational. When you're tired, the business fogs, the team hesitates, the momentum slows. Put your mask on first, and then build something that breathes without you holding it up. Chapter 4, the pain you're not facing is already costing you. In The Obstacle is the Way, Ryan Holiday reminds us that adversity isn't the problem. It's the path. Right now, one of the biggest obstacles in your business might not be competition, cash flow, or capacity. It might be something quieter, something you haven't been willing to face. Disengagement. Gallup's 2026 State of the Global Workplace put global employee engagement at 20%, the lowest level since 2020, and estimated that low engagement costs the global economy about $10 trillion in lost productivity. In the same report, manager engagement fell to 22%. You can call it quiet quitting, disengagement, or detachment. The label matters less than the cost. They're showing up, but they're not bought in. They're doing just enough to keep the paycheck, not enough to move the mission. And here's the hard truth. Most leaders don't realize it because they haven't been paying attention. If your people aren't aligned, nothing else matters. You can install every automation tool, upgrade your CRM, hire consultants, but if your team doesn't care, the systems won't stick. You can't outsource engagement. You can't automate culture. You have to lead it. This is the part most leaders skip. They jump straight to solutions before diagnosing the real disease, disconnection. Your gut check. Do your people know where the company's going? Do they believe they play a vital role in it? Can they recite the vision better than you? If the answer is no, your first job isn't scaling. It's aligning. Start there. Because the obstacle, your team's disengagement, is the way. Chapter 5, AI won't replace your people unless you fail to lead them. You cannot automate your way out of misalignment. I have watched leaders reach for a tool the way a tired person reaches for coffee. The team is stretched, the work is piling up, and the promise of software that does more with less feels like relief. So they buy the tool, push it down, and wait for the numbers to change. They rarely do. The tool does not fail because it is weak. It fails because the people it was supposed to help never bought into it, and no one led them into it. This is not a technology problem. It is a leadership problem. In the first edition, I made this argument about basic automation, the kind that moved data between apps and handled repetitive follow-up. The argument still holds, but the stakes changed. What sits on your team's desk today does not just move information. It drafts, it summarizes, it analyzes, it prepares, and it reasons alongside your people. It writes a first version of a business plan. It preps someone for a meeting. It reviews a long document and tells you what matters. It turns a blank page into a rough draft of almost anything in seconds. That is a different kind of power, and it raises a different kind of question in the mind of every person you lead. The question they actually have. Before anyone learns a single feature, they are asking one thing: am I being replaced? They may not say it out loud. They will smile in the training, nod at the rollout, and quietly decide that the smart move is to protect their role by staying invisible. You cannot train your way past that fear. No feature tour lands on a person who thinks the tool is there to end them. You have to answer the question first, directly, out loud, and early. So answer it. Here is the language I use, and it is close to what I wrote in the first edition because the core has not changed. This is not about cutting roles. It is about helping you graduate from the repetitive work into the high leverage work that only humans can do. If we build these systems together, we all get to grow together. Say it plainly, then prove it with how you act. The people who hear that message and see it backed by real decisions will lean in. The people who only hear a slogan will wait you out. Belief does not scale on words. it scales on proof. Lead them into it, not around it. The instinct is to build the system quietly and hand it down finished. That instinct is wrong. When you build around your people, you confirm their worst fear, and you lose the one thing the tool cannot give you, which is the judgment your team already carries about how the work actually gets done. Lead them into the build. Let the person who lives inside a task be the one who shapes how the tool handles it. They know where the exceptions hide. They know which shortcuts break things. When they help build it, they own it. And ownership is the difference between a tool that gets used and a tool that gets ignored. Then reward the people who help. Not with applause, with money. If someone helps you find real leverage, they should share in what that leverage creates. Here's how I think about paying for it. Scenario one, the individual bonus. An admin uses AI to handle client communication and lead follow-up. She sets it up to draft responses, summarize incoming messages, and prepare the daily list of who needs a personal touch. She saves 5 hours a week, and the drafts are good enough that the work improves, not just speeds up. Pay her for the leverage she built. Multiply the hours she saves each week by her hourly wage, then by 4 weeks. That is the monthly value she created. The bonus is 50% of that first month's value. 5 hours a week, week after week, is real-time return to the business, and the drafts made the work better on top of it. She helped build the system. She gets paid the moment it works. Scenario two, the company-wide pool. Set a shared pool tied to real adoption. Pick a handful of things that matter and fund the pool when the team hits them together. Fund a bonus pool when the team hits its adoption goals across a small set of tracked measures. The measures should be things a team can actually move. How many roles are using the tool for real work? How many hours are coming back each week? How much faster the important work now moves? Whether the quality of the output went up, not just the speed. When the team clears the bar, everyone shares in the pool. Adoption stops being something you push and becomes something they pull. Scenario three, the gain share. An operations team uses AI across several roles to handle scheduling, prepare invoices, and review incoming documents before anything gets escalated to a person. 12 hours a week come back across the team. Errors drop by half because the tool catches what tired eyes miss. Responses go out 2 days faster. That is real money and real risk removed. Share the gain. Total value created equals recovered hours plus the cost of errors avoided plus the value of faster response. The team shares an agreed percentage of that value for an agreed period. Put a number on the hours, put a number on the errors, put a number on the speed, then hand a fair slice of it back to the people who made it happen. A gain share is not charity. It is a raise the team earned by building the thing that pays for it. Every one of these is a model. Not a promise. I kept them generic on purpose, the way I did in the first edition, because your business will set its own numbers. But I am no longer only theorizing. Later in this book, I will show you what happened when I ran this playbook for real inside a large real estate services organization with real people and real results. For now, hold the principle. Pay people to help you build the system that scales. The three types. When you put a tool like this in front of a team, people sort themselves into three groups within weeks. The first group becomes super users. They push the tool, find its edges, and bend it to the work. They stop asking whether it can help and start asking how much. The second group is testing and learning. They are careful, a little skeptical, and moving at their own pace. Given time and a leader who answered the fear question honestly, most of them come along. The third group ignores it. They wait, they hope it passes, and they keep doing the work the old way. In the first edition, I described these three groups as a coming challenge. In the 2 years since, the gap between the first group and the third stopped being theoretical. The person who leaned in is now doing work the person who waited cannot even see. That gap is not about talent. It is about who was led and who was left alone. It is your job to close it, and you close it by leading. Not by pushing a tool and hoping. Automation never replaced your people. AI will not either. It rewards the people who help you build the system that scales. Chapter 6. You don't rise to the level of your goals, you fall to the level of your systems. If your goals feel heavy, it's not because they're too big. It's because your systems are too weak. Big visions don't need more hustle. They need more structure. Here's how to start building that. The simple system blueprint. Every system can be broken into three parts: trigger, then action, then outcome. Trigger, what starts the process? Action, what gets done, by who, using what tool? Outcome, what does done look like? Example, trigger, new lead fills out website form. Action, send auto response plus assigned sales task. Outcome, lead is contacted within 10 minutes. Fix what you touch too much. Don't try to systemize your whole business overnight. Start with one thing that annoys you, one thing you do manually, one thing your team always asks you about. Fix that first. That win will build momentum, and momentum compounds faster than perfection ever will. Chapter 7. Scale isn't a headcount, it's a system working without you. Don't add people to broken processes. Add clarity to systems that scale people. Most leaders think more volume means more hiring. But if your system is broken, more people just means more chaos. Scaling isn't about how many people you have. It's about how well your systems work, especially when you're not in the room. Early stages rely on hustle. But to scale profitably, you need systems that give your team structure, autonomy, and visibility. Stop thinking about scaling with bodies. Start thinking about scaling with blueprints. I learned this most clearly through acquisitions and integrations. When you acquire a company, you do not just inherit revenue. You inherit habits, handoffs, tech stacks, reporting rhythms, and quiet exceptions that never made it into a manual. Stack those on top of each other, and growth turns into drag. The only way to make integration work is to turn the best operating rhythm into a repeatable system, then move people into it with clarity instead of force. The system is what makes the acquisition accretive. A system that works without you. Has clear inputs, outputs, and expectations. Is documented, repeatable, and trainable. Lets people operate at 80% without asking you every 10%. You don't need another assistant if your follow-up sequence runs automatically. You don't need a project manager if your CRM triggers tasks and milestones. You don't need another operator if your dashboards show what's working in real time. When systems are clear, your team feels empowered, not micromanaged. They know the goal, they trust the process, they own the outcome. So next time you feel the urge to hire, pause. Ask yourself, is the system working? Can a tool do this? Does this need a person or a process? Scale isn't a headcount. It's a system that works with or without you. Chapter 8, proof isn't just for customers, it's for your team too. Belief doesn't scale on words, it scales on proof. We often think of testimonials as a marketing tactic. And yes, external proof is powerful. But here's what most leaders miss. Your team needs proof too. Proof that the system works, proof that the goal is possible, proof that their time and effort matter. Belief is what moves people, and belief is built through results. When a team member sees a peer win by following the process, something unlocks. If they can do it, maybe I can too. That's how momentum spreads. That's how systems stick. That's how buy-in becomes behavior. Start documenting the wins. Customer hits a milestone, share it. Employee runs a play and it works, spotlight it. System saves time, track it. The more proof you create, the more belief compounds. The more belief compounds, the more aligned your people become. And the more aligned your people are, the faster your systems scale. Proof isn't just validation, it's fuel. Chapter 9, dashboards over drama. If you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business. Most business owners make decisions based on gut or guesswork and then wonder why their team is confused, performance is inconsistent, or drama keeps showing up. You don't need more meetings, you need more visibility. Dashboards fix what status updates can't. They Give your people a real-time snapshot of what matters most. Replace micromanagement with accountability. Create clarity without chaos. Track leading indicators. Are we doing the things that drive results? Lagging indicators. Did those things actually work? Capacity and friction. Where are we blocked? No bloated KPI spreadsheets. No check-ins for the sake of checking in. Just clear, consistent scoreboards that let people own their lane. When your team sees their numbers, they don't need reminders. When you see the trends, you don't need drama. Build a simple visual dashboard. Update it weekly. Share it openly. Let everyone know what winning looks like. Because when the scoreboard is clear, the drama disappears. Chapter 10, strategy is sexy. Execution pays the bills. Everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. Mike Tyson. Vision gets the applause. Execution earns the revenue. Most leaders are great at casting vision. What separates the ones who win is they build systems that execute even when the mood fades. Because most people don't need another idea. They need a playbook they'll actually follow. Here's what execution looks like. Daily scorecards and weekly dashboards and monthly pulse reviews are simple automated reports. Execution isn't a motivational wave, it's an operational rhythm. Want consistency? Show up when it's not exciting. Do the repeatable stuff that builds scale. Track performance and hold the standard every single week. Build the rhythm. Repeat the plays. Refine what works. Replace what doesn't. The vision gets people in the room. But execution is what keeps the lights on. Because strategy is sexy, but execution pays the bills. Chapter 11, grow the people, grow the business. Take care of your people and they'll take care of your business. Richard Branson. You can't build a scalable company on burned out people. You can't build long-term trust with short-term leadership. If you want your business to grow, your people have to grow with it. That means giving them a clear path forward, creating space to develop new skills, tying their growth to the company's mission and outcomes. Too often, leaders focus on recruiting talent, but they ignore retaining it. Retention isn't about ping-pong tables and perks, it's about purpose. When someone sees that their role is evolving, their value is growing, and their contributions matter, they stay. And more importantly, they perform. You don't need to be a great motivator. You need to be a great developer. That means coaching, not controlling. It means systems that train and elevate, not ones that track and restrict. Your job as a leader isn't to make all the decisions. It's to build the environment where smart people can make great decisions without you. So if you want to scale, look around. Ask yourself, who on my team is ready for more? Where have I failed to show the next step? What structure could I build to help them grow? Because when you grow the people, you grow the business. Here is how this shows up in my week. I close every company-wide meeting the same way, not with logistics, not with a scramble of announcements before people scatter. I close with one short video I chose on purpose. I tee it up with a single leading question, I play it, and then I run exactly three questions with the room. That is the last thing anyone experiences before we break. The placement is the whole point. People do not carry out the average of a meeting. They carry out the end of it. Whatever they feel in the final minutes is what they walk into the hallway with. And the hallway is where the work actually starts. Put the same video in the middle and it gets buried under everything that follows. Put it at the close, right before people disperse to act, and it sets the tone they act on. I do not pick the video at random. I pick a lane. Some weeks the company needs growth, so I choose something about raising the standard. Some weeks it needs vision, so I choose something that lifts their eyes past the quarter. Some weeks it needs innovation, so I choose something that gives them permission to try. I am not reading the room to entertain it. I am reading the room to develop it. The three questions matter as much as the video. They turn watching into thinking, and thinking into a commitment people say out loud in front of each other. That is where a mindset actually takes hold. The full method and a starter library of videos sorted by lane is in the workbook as the meeting close playbook. Use it. Most leaders end meetings on logistics, end yours on meaning. The logistics will still get done. The meaning is what lasts. Chapter 12. Systems don't squeeze, they support. Structure isn't the enemy of creativity, it's the foundation of freedom. Kevin M. Leonard. If you think systems are about control, you've already missed the point. The right system doesn't restrict your people. It releases them. When a team doesn't know what to do, who owns what, or where to go next, they don't get creative. They shut down. They hesitate. They play it safe. They burn out. Systems don't squeeze people. They support them. They remove decision fatigue, create confidence, and allow your people to focus on what actually moves the needle. Start with one area: onboarding, follow-up, reporting, anywhere your team hesitates. Ask, what's the friction here? What question keeps getting asked? What could we solve once and for all? Then build the process, make it visual, make it repeatable, make it work without your daily input. Because systems don't squeeze your people. They support them. They give them space to rise and clarity to run. Chapter 13, don't run your business, design it. Your business doesn't need you in every room. It needs you to build the rooms. KML. Most leaders wear too many hats. They operate, they manage, they solve, they rescue, they run the business until the business runs them. But real leadership is about design, not dependency. Your job isn't to hold the whole thing together. Your job is to build a system that holds without you. You're not the engine. You're the architect. The moment that shift happens, everything changes. You stop asking, how do I get it all done? You start asking, how do I build a system that gets it done without me? That's how true scale begins. So here's your challenge. Where are you still too involved? What would it take to remove yourself? What would need to be true for someone else to thrive there? Because you weren't meant to run your business forever. You were meant to design it so it could run, grow, and scale with or without you. Chapter 14, scale without selling your soul. Success without fulfillment is the ultimate failure. Tony Robbins. Let's be honest. Building a business is hard, but losing yourself while building it, that's worse. There's a dangerous moment in scale when the numbers look good, the team is growing, and everything seems to be working, but something inside feels off. You're making progress, but not peace. You're achieving more, but enjoying less. You're scaling fast, but drifting far. This chapter is your checkpoint. Scaling without selling your soul means you still see your family, you still wake up with energy. You're building a company that matches your values, not just your revenue targets. That doesn't mean it's easy. It means it's intentional. It means you stop copying playbooks that don't fit your life. It means you stop chasing goals that were never yours to begin with. It means you build a business that feels like you. Ask yourself, would the younger version of you respect the way you lead now? Would your kids want to inherit the culture you've created? If the answer isn't yes, make the change now. Because the goal isn't just to scale, it's to scale without selling your soul. Chapter 15, legacy, dream it, design it, do it. Legacy is not leaving something for people, it's leaving something in people. Peter Stropel. Legacy isn't just what you leave behind, it's what you build into everything you touch. It's in the systems that still run when you're not around. It's in the leaders you developed who now lead others. It's in the values your company lives, not the ones just written on the wall. You don't just dream legacy, you design it, you build it, you live it. And so here's the challenge. What parts of your business would outlast you today? What would fall apart the moment you stepped away? What could you do right now to design something that serves your family, your team, and your purpose long after you're gone? Because legacy isn't about being remembered. It's about building something worth continuing. Dream it, design it, do it. The field test? The first 15 chapters made an argument. The last three report what happened when I ran it, inside a real organization with real people and measured results. I could not have written this section in the first edition. I had not done it yet. Chapter 16, leaders first, then the cascade. The goal was never AI, and the goal was to increase business and production. That is the work. That is what pays the bills and keeps people employed. AI was not the mission. AI was the lever I reached for, once the goal was already clear. I want to be precise about that order because most people get it backwards. They start with the tool and go looking for a problem it can solve. That is how you end up with expensive software nobody uses and a team that quietly resents it. I started with the outcome. Then I asked what would move it. You choose the lever after you name the goal, not before. So we built a roadshow. Senior leadership went to every office across the 60 office footprint. Not a memo, not a recorded briefing, not a link in an email that half the team would never open. We went in person to connect with the leadership, the admins, and the agents face to face in their own building. This is systems thinking applied to change management. If you want people to change how they work, you do not announce it from a distance. You carry it to them. That distinction matters more than it sounds. A memo asks people to change on their own time, on their own faith, with no one in the room to answer the real question underneath every rollout, which is always the same. What does this mean for me? You cannot answer that question through a screen. You answer it standing in front of someone. The tool itself was a custom AI business planning assistant. One platform calls it a gem. Another calls it a custom GPT. The name does not matter, and you should not let it matter. I built it to do one specific job, to help a manager or an agent sit down and build a real plan to grow their business, not a lecture on technology. A working tool aimed straight at the goal we started with. Then came the part that was the actual lesson. I did not put that tool in front of a single agent first. I rolled it out to management and leadership first. Before anyone else touched it, the leaders learned what it could do, what it could not do, and where it helped and where it did not. They used it themselves. They got comfortable. They found the edges. Adoption is not a broadcast. It is a sequence. And the sequence starts with the people who lead. That order is not a nicety. It is the whole design. Because when senior leadership then arrived at each office, the local manager was not seeing this tool for the first time in front of their team. The manager was already fluent. They could sit down one-on-one with every agent and run business planning right there in the room with the tool doing real work in front of real people. More productive, more efficient. And in the same motion, it put the agents in front of AI inside a tool that actually helped them, not a demo, not a slide, a thing that made their own plan better. Think about what that protects. A manager who is fumbling with a new tool in front of their people loses authority in that moment. And authority is the thing you cannot afford to spend during a change. By putting leaders first, I made sure the person the team trusts most was also the person most comfortable. The trust and the tool arrived together, carried by the same hand. The feedback was exceptional. People were genuinely excited, and I do not use that word loosely. But the most valuable thing we learned was not the excitement. It was a gap most leaders would have walked right past. Many people did not even know they already had access to AI. And most of the ones who did had never been shown how to use it. The access was sitting there, paid for, available, and unused, because nobody had ever put it in someone's hands and said, "Here, this is for you. This is how it helps." That is the quiet failure inside a lot of organizations. Not that the capability is missing, that nobody closed the distance between the capability and the person. The roadshow surfaced that gap and closed it in the same visit. None of this was really about the software. It was mindset shift. It was change management. It was vision casting, getting people to adopt and adapt to a way of working that is more productive, more thoughtful, more strategic, and clearer. The tool was the occasion. The shift was the point. This ties back to two things I argued earlier in this book, and now I have watched them hold up in the field. Earlier in this book, I told you that you cannot automate your way out of misalignment. This is the proof. If leadership had not been aligned first, if the managers had been handed a tool they did not understand and told to sell it downstream, no amount of good software would have saved that rollout. The alignment came first. The automation worked because of it, not instead of it. And in an earlier chapter, I told you that belief does not scale on words. It scales on proof. A memo is words. A manager sitting beside an agent, building a real plan with a real tool that makes that agent's business better, is proof. That is why it landed. People did not adopt AI because I told them to. They adopted it because someone they trusted showed them it worked in their own building, on their own goals. Adoption is sequence trust, not a memo. Lead the leaders first, and the cascade takes care of itself. Chapter 17, read the room, build the answer. The roadshow taught me one office at a time. It was slow work by design. You sit with a group, you read their faces, you answer the question behind the question, and then you drive to the next place and do it again. That kind of teaching builds trust, but it does not scale by itself. You reach the people in the room and no one else. The convention was different. The organization hosts one each year, and it brings everyone together in one place. For the length of the event, the whole company is in the building at the same time. When I was asked to moderate a panel on AI there, I understood what the moment actually was. The same conversation I'd been carrying from office to office could finally happen in front of everyone at once. The scale changed. The message did not. I opened from the stage with a stance, not a sales pitch. AI already sits inside the daily work, whether or not anyone announced it. It writes property descriptions. It customizes pre-listing checklists. It builds marketing plans. It reads and sorts client data. The tools are already here and already in use. So the question I put to the room was never whether AI belongs in this business. It is already in it. The real question is how we use it well. Then I said the line I care most about, the one I would ask any operator to sit with. AI is worthless until you apply it to create value. Return on investment, more production, more income, lower expenses, better marketing. A tool that impresses you and changes nothing is a toy. The value is not in the technology. The value is in what the technology does to the numbers you are responsible for. To make that land, I gave the room a way to think about the tool that takes the mystery out of it. Treat AI like a new team member. Smart, fast, and still learning. You would not hand a new hire the keys and let them run the office on their first day. You would guide them, check their work, and give them more rope as they earned it. Do the same here. With supervision, this new team member becomes one of the most valuable tools you have. Without it, it becomes a liability wearing a confident face. From there, I ran the conversation as an honest working session, not a highlight reel. I wanted excitement and guardrails in the same hour because that is what an operator actually needs. We started with first impressions and how those impressions changed once people stopped reading about AI and actually used it. We moved to real daily use. Not the theory of it, but the specific moments where a tool changed a workflow or improved what the client experienced. We worked through a concrete case that had come up in preparation, applying AI to home inspection reports, where the time saved and the accuracy gained were real, and where the rules of the profession still had to be respected. We talked about disclosure and client transparency. Should you tell a client when AI touched their work, and what is the risk of loading a sales contract or a listing agreement into a tool you do not control? We talked about how you confirm the output is right before you send it to anyone. I told them to treat the tool like a very eager assistant, brilliant on a good day, and still capable of being confidently wrong, which means you check the work every time. We talked about protecting client information as more of that information flows into these tools, and we closed on what comes next, the opportunities worth chasing, and the risks worth watching. That is the shape of an honest AI conversation, not hype, because hype gets people burned. Not fear, because fear keeps them frozen. You hold both in the same room. You show them what the tool can do. And in the same breath, you show them where it will hurt them if they get lazy. My closing from the stage was simple. AI is not here to replace the professionals in this room. It helps us do better work, faster, and with fewer wasted steps. Guide it, check its work, and use the room it gives you back for the part of the job no tool can do, which is building relationships and serving clients. Here is the part that mattered most, and it did not happen on the stage. It happened after. An hour of honest talk about AI, guardrails and all, and the room did not empty out relieved that it was over. People stayed. They asked for more sessions, more training, more on automation and, in their words, the mindset to use AI. They were not asking me to sell them on it. They had already decided they wanted it. They were asking who was going to give it to them and when. That is a demand signal, and I have learned to trust those more than any survey. When you read the room honestly, the room tells you what to build next. The appetite in that space was larger than anything the organization was formally supplying. Nobody had to be convinced to care. The care was already there, ahead of the supply, waiting for structure. This is the pattern I want you to see because it is not unique to me or to my company. The demand for real leadership on AI is almost always already inside your walls. Your people are using these tools with no framework, no standards, and no one to check their judgment against. They are not waiting for permission. They are waiting for someone to give the whole thing shape. The roadshow proved I could change one room. The convention proved the whole company was asking for it. The market for this was inside the building the entire time. The only question left was who would build the answer. That is what the next chapter is about. Chapter 18, the proof. The demand was real. That was the first thing the last two chapters made clear. A room leaning in, managers asking for more, wins showing up in places nobody assigned. But a room full of interest is not a system, and scattered wins are not proof. They are signals. Signals tell you where to build. They do not do the building for you. This book made a rule early, and the rule holds here. You do not rise to the level of your goals. You fall to the level of your systems. Enthusiasm is a goal state. It fades the week something breaks. What survives the week something breaks is structure. So the question at the end of all of this was never whether people wanted AI. They did. The question was whether there was a system underneath the wanting. There was. And it did not start with AI. Before any of this, I built and ran a leadership program inside the organization called BOSS, the Brokerage Operating Success System. I conceived it, authored it, and ran it. And it belongs to the organization, not to me. What matters here is not the ownership. It is the shape. BOSS treated leadership development the way an operator treats anything that has to work at scale, not as inspiration, as a system. Module by module, leaders built a personal operating rhythm, learned to recruit through relationships instead of pitches, raised the value of the average engagement, coached their producers against real numbers, captured revenue that was already walking through the door, handled hard conversations on purpose instead of avoiding them, ran meetings people actually valued, treated culture as a measurable system, planned the year in quarterly blocks, and took back control of their calendars. Every module ended the same way, with action items due in days, not someday, and a personal commitment each leader put in writing. A repeatable way to build capable leaders, run on purpose, measured by what came out the other side. Most leadership development fails for a reason that has nothing to do with the content. The content is usually fine. It fails because it is an event and not a system. People leave the room motivated and return to the same structure that shaped them before they walked in. Motivation without infrastructure evaporates on contact with a normal week. BOSS was built the other way around. It assumed the week would be normal and hard, and it put structure where the motivation would otherwise have to carry the load. It worked, and it worked before a single line of it touched a model. That is the part I need you to hold on to. The operating system came first, the technology came later. That sequence is the whole argument of this book compressed into one fact. AI BOSS is the version I own, the Artificial Intelligence Business Operating Success System. 8 modules, a full operating system, not a single tool. It is not a tools course. Nobody needed a tools course. A tools course teaches people to press buttons and leaves the culture exactly where it was. AI BOSS is a leadership operating system for AI adoption, which is a different thing entirely because the constraint was never the tool. The constraint was the leadership around the tool. The premise sits at the center of every module, and I will state it plainly, AI does not transform companies. Leadership does. So we ran it. Here's what came back, told the way an operator should tell it, which means told against its own limits. 29 managers went through the program inside a 2,100 agent real estate services organization. 29 is the number to keep in your head, because it is the denominator for everything that follows. No rate in this chapter is measured against a friendlier base. The managers rated the work. 78 ratings came in, averaging 4.51, with 85% landing in the top box. Good numbers, not the important ones. Satisfaction tells you people like the room. It does not tell you anything changed. This is what told me something changed. The median manager reclaimed 5 hours per week of leadership capacity, not saved in theory, reclaimed in practice week after week from the recurring work a capable assistant can carry so a leader does not have to. 5 hours a week is not a rounding error. That is the difference between a leader who is busy and a leader who is available. And it did not come from a textbook or a webinar series. It came from reps. From managers doing the work on a deadline until the tool stopped being foreign. Then the behavior started moving on its own. 16 of the 29 managers began fielding AI requests from their own agents, which means the thing had crossed out of the training room and into the field where the business actually happens. Roughly 20 agents were citing AI use by name, and two things formed that nobody mandated. One AI workgroup self-assembled. One monthly mastermind standing on its own. You can mandate attendance. You cannot mandate a mastermind. People do not build standing structures around things they tolerate. They build them around things they believe in. And belief that builds its own scaffolding is the only kind that lasts. Two listing wins came out of it, and both are worth telling because they show what this looks like on the ground. In the first, a manager fed a draft of listing language through a custom AI assistant, the kind one platform calls a gem and another calls a custom GPT, and asked it to check the copy. It flagged a fair housing problem in the wording before the listing ever went live. That is not a productivity gain. That is exposure that never happened, a category of loss you only ever see when it does not get caught. In the second, a manager used the same kind of assistant to reverse engineer a stalled pre-listing into a plan that got the property to market. One catch, one recovery. Both real, both documented. Now the harder part, and the part I care about most. Here is what these numbers are not. Two listing wins are two listing wins. They are not a run rate. I am not going to multiply them by 12 and hand you a number, because two documented outcomes over one field test is exactly the kind of thing you do not annualize. The moment you extrapolate two wins into an annual projection, you have stopped reporting and started selling, and the reader can feel it. The hours are different, and even the hours I'm going to state as a floor. Reclaimed capacity is the one result solid enough to monetize, and only at the bottom of its range. 15 managers holding 5 reclaimed hours a week, valued at $50 an hour across 48 working weeks, is $144,000 a year in returned leadership capacity. Call it a floor and nothing more. Capacity becomes cash only when it is redeployed. Hours reclaimed and then wasted are worth exactly zero. Everything above that floor, the adoption spreading manager to manager, the groups forming on their own, the catch that saved a listing, is upside I am not going to price. That restraint is not modesty. It is the credibility. Numbers with no warts are a warning, not a proof. Roughly a fifth of the managers ducked the hardest work in the program. Skipped it. I am telling you that on purpose, because it is exactly why you should believe the rest. If anyone ever shows you adoption results with no soft spots and no honest floor, walk away. Report your own results the same way I just reported these. Name the floor, name the upside as upside, name the part that did not work. That is how an operator earns a number the reader can stand on. This closes the loop the book opened chapters ago. The argument back then was that belief does not scale on words, it scales on proof. This is the proof, not a case study borrowed from someone else. A system I built, run inside a real organization, measured against its own limits, warts named out loud. Your organization has the same latent demand sitting in it right now. The same managers quietly carrying work a system could take off them. The same people who would form their own work group the moment they were given something worth forming it around. The demand is not the question. It was never the question. The only question is whether you build the system underneath it. The workbook that follows is where that starts. It is not the whole system. It is the starting kit. Use it. AI does not transform companies. Leadership does. Now go build the proof. Workbook and bonus resources. The following resources are designed to be downloaded and used as practical applications of the book. Use these frameworks and exercises with your team to simplify execution, scale smarter, and stay human first as you go AI forward. 1. Structure Blueprint Template. Use this to document and delegate any repeatable workflow. Trigger: what starts the task? Action: who does it? With what tool? Outcome: what does done look like? Example: trigger, lead submitted via website. Action: auto text sent plus CRM task assigned to rep. Outcome: lead contacted within 10 minutes. 2. Team alignment questions. Ask your team to reflect on these prompts before introducing automation. Where do you feel the most friction or wasted time? What tasks feel repetitive and uncreative? What would free you up to focus on work that matters? Bonus tip: explain that automation isn't about replacement. It's about removing the grind so they can grow. 3. Compensation bonus logic formulas. Use these plug-and-play models to reward workflow improvements. One-time bonus formula: hours saved per week times hourly wage. Times 4 equals monthly savings implies bonus equals 50% of value. Team efficiency bonus. Pool. Pool funded by hitting 4 to 5 key metrics leads to distributed across team based on role/performance. Revenue impact. Bonus. Leads recovered times average profit per lead times 10 to 20% equals bonus pool. 4. AI Literacy Checklist, version 2. The first edition of this checklist came out in 2025. The 5 items below held up. Keep them. The 5 that still work. Show what the AI can and cannot do. Set the ceiling before anyone tests it. Explain the why behind the automation. People adopt what they understand. Assign an internal AI ambassador. One person owns questions, wins, and problems. Start with low risk, high frequency tasks. Build trust where a mistake is cheap. Share wins and results early. Momentum is a management tool. Then the tools changed. This edition adds what the new generation requires. What changed? The last generation of tools move data. This one works alongside your people. A modern assistant can draft, summarize, analyze, and prepare. It reads a long thread and hands you the short version. It takes a rough note and returns a clean first draft. It reasons next to your team instead of just shuffling information from one box to another. That is a different kind of help, and it needs a different set of rules. The point stays the same. The tool carries drag so your people can carry judgment, relationships, and the call on what is right. Used well, it gives your team back their hours. In our own testing, the median manager reclaimed 5 hours a week. That time goes back into people, not into more screen time. What the new generation adds. 6. Set the supervision rule. The assistant prepares, the human decides, nothing leaves the building unchecked. Put this in plain words for the whole team because the tool is fast enough to make skipping the check feel safe. It is not. 7. Draw the data line. Name what may never go into an unapproved tool. Write the list down. Signed contracts and legal documents, private client information, anything you would not email to a stranger. If it belongs behind a locked door in your office, it does not belong in a tool you have not approved. 8. Build the validation habit. Treat every output like a very eager assistant. Brilliant sometimes, confidently wrong sometimes. It will hand you a clean, sure answer that is simply not true. So check every time. The confidence in the writing tells you nothing about whether it is correct. 9. Teach prompting as a skill. Good input drives good output. Prompting well is a skill your team can learn, not a personality trait. Give them one frame to lean on. persona. Tell it who to act as. Task. State exactly what you want done. Context. Give it the background it needs. Format. Say how the answer should look. 5. Fast start challenge. Within 7 days, pick one recurring task, one your team touches every week. Stand up one custom assistant aimed at that single task. Run it with a human supervising every output. Share the result with the team, the good and the rough. One task, one assistant, 1 week. Start there, then widen. More tools and templates at scalewithheart.com. Bonus toolkit, top 5 easy automations to launch this month. These automation examples are low lift, high impact, and apply directly to your existing team roles. Each one includes a suggested tool, real use case, estimated time saved, and an optional bonus structure. 1. For admins. Automation, lead follow-up sequence. Tool, Go High Level or Zapier plus Gmail. What it does, sends a personalized text / email when a new lead comes in, plus assigns a task in your CRM. Time saved, approximately 5 hours per week. Impact, faster lead response, fewer missed follow-ups, more closed deals. Bonus formula, estimated hours saved per week times hourly wage. Times 4 equals monthly savings implies bonus equals 50% of first month value. 2. For sales. Automation, appointment reminders. Tool, Go High Level or Calendly plus SMS/ email integration. What it does, sends auto reminders 24 hours and 1 hour before meetings. Time saved, 3 to 5 hours per week. Impact, cuts no-shows, increases show-up rate, boosts conversions. Bonus idea, if show-up rate improves 20% over last quarter, $200 bonus. 3. For ops or service teams. Automation, customer onboarding sequence. Tool, Zapier or Go High Level plus Gmail plus Google Sheets. What it does, sends welcome email, assigns onboarding tasks, and logs in shared tracker. Time saved, 4 to 6 hours per week. Impact, seamless experience, no dropped handoffs, faster time to value. Bonus formula, clients onboarded per month times time saved per client times hourly wage equals total value implies bonus equals 50% of first month savings. 4. For leadership. Automation, weekly KPI scorecard, tool, Airtable or Google Sheets plus Zapier or Databox. What it does, pulls metrics plus emails dashboard to team every Monday. Time saved, 3 to 4 hours per week. Impact, alignment, better decisions, know where are we at? Convos. Bonus idea, if team hits 3 lead KP is for 6 weeks straight, then $200 per team lead bonus. 5. For everyone. Automation, missed call to auto text. Tool, Go High Level or Twilio plus CRM. What it does, sends auto text when call is missed, offers callback or text reply. Time saved, 2+ hours per week plus recovers lost leads. Impact, captures opportunities you would have lost, increases booked calls. Bonus formula, estimated leads recovered per month times average profit per lead times 10 to 20% equals one-time implementation bonus. Additional worksheets and templates. Quarterly systems audit worksheet. Review every 90 days, system what's working, what needs fixing. Questions to ask, what systems worked flawlessly? What broke, got skipped, or required manual fixes? What new process can we automate or simplify? Vision transfer template. Use this prompt to clarify the mission and drive buy-in. What does our business look like 1 year from now? Why does this matter for the customer and the team? What's each person's role in making that vision real? Stop, start, automate grid. Ask your team to contribute ideas in each column. Stop, start, automate. Tasks we should eliminate. Tasks we should begin doing. tasks we repeat and could systematize. Role clarity map. For each department or role, define three most critical outcomes. Who owns each outcome by role? What tools/system support them? Culture check-in exercise. After automation rollouts, ask, how does this system support your work? Has it reduced friction or created new confusion? What's one thing you'd improve next? The leader's first rollout. Most AI rollouts start with the tool and hope for adoption. This one starts with the goal and earns it. Adoption is not a download. It is sequence trust, leaders first, then the cascade. Use the protocol to run your own rollout. Use the spec to build the first assistant it depends on. Part one, the leader's first rollout protocol. Run these six steps in order. Do not skip ahead to the tool. Pick the business goal first. Name the outcome you are trying to move before you name any technology. Mine was more production and more business. AI is not the goal. It is the leverage. If you cannot say what result the tool serves, you are not ready to roll it out. Build one purpose-built assistant for that goal, not a tool for everything. One assistant aimed at one outcome. Build a custom AI assistant, whatever your platform calls a saved custom assistant. Feed it your planning framework, your standards, and your vocabulary so it thinks in your language and holds your bar, not a generic one. Train leaders and managers first. Before one frontline person sees the assistant, your leaders learn it. They practice what it does well, where it falls short, and where it needs a human. Leaders who have used the tool can lead others into it. Leaders who have only heard about it cannot. Carry it to your people. Go to every location or team in person. Do not send a memo and wait. Do not announce. Demonstrate. Adoption spreads through presence, not policy. Have managers run it one-on-one with real work. Sit each person down with their manager and the assistant on a task that matters. A real business plan, not a demo. Real stakes teach faster than a tour. The person leaves with a plan in hand and a tool they have actually used. Capture what surfaces. Write down what you learn in the room. Expect a gap most leaders never see. People who did not know they had AI access at all and did not know how to use it. Closing that gap is not a footnote to the rollout. It is part of the win. Bonus tip. The rollout is a mindset shift before it is a technology shift. You are getting people to adopt a way of working that is more productive, more thoughtful, and more strategic. Lead the people into the process, not around it. Part two, build a business planning assistant. A one afternoon build. This is the assistant step two asks for, aimed at the planning goal. Set aside a few hours and stand up the first version. Load these into it, your planning template, the actual document your best people use to build a plan. Last year's goal framework, so it plans against your standard, not a generic one. The questions a great manager asks in a planning session, the ones that pull real numbers and real commitments out of a person. Your vocabulary and standards, so its output sounds like your company. And hold your bar. Tell it to do this. Interview the person one question at a time. Do not lecture. Draw out their goals, their numbers, and their obstacles. Draft the plan from their answers in your template ready to review. Flag the gaps. Name what is missing, what looks thin, and what does not add up so nothing important gets skipped. Hold this supervision rule. The manager reviews everything. The assistant prepares. The human decides. It drafts the plan, surfaces the gaps, and does the grunt work of getting to a first version. It never approves the plan, and it never replaces the manager in the room. That judgment stays with your people. For updated templates, prompts, and walkthrough videos, visit the companion workbook page at scalewithheart.com. The AI Conversation Guide. One honest hour about AI with your team beats a year of memos. A memo tells people what to think. An hour lets them say what they already believe out loud in front of each other. That is where the real questions live, and that is where adoption starts. This guide is the agenda for that hour. You run it as the moderator. It works with a small group around a table or a packed room. You do not need to be the expert in the room. You need to open the door, ask the questions in order, and listen harder than you talk. The leader who moderates the conversation gets a roadmap. The leader who sends the memo gets silence. Set the tone. Open with your own words. Here are the words you can say verbatim. AI is already woven into the daily work, whether we have talked about it or not. Today is not about whether it belongs. It is about how we use it, what is working, and where we need to be careful. Think of AI as a new team member, smart, fast, still learning, and never left to run on its own before it earns your trust. That frame does more than set a tone. It lowers the fear because nobody has to defend a decision that has already happened. And it raises the standard because a new team member gets trained, checked, and held to your rules. The questions. Ask them in this order. Give the room time. The silence after a question is where the honest answers come from. First impressions. What did you think about AI at first? And how did that change once you actually used it? Start here on purpose. It gives the skeptics and the early users the same starting line. How we use it today. Where are you already using AI in your work? And what made a real difference in how you operate or how a client experienced it? You are mapping reality, not assigning it. One use case, end to end. Pick a concrete task the team already runs with AI. Walk it all the way through. How much time did it save? How accurate was it? What still needs a human to review before it goes out? Do not accept it is great. Get the specifics and the exceptions. Disclosure and data. Should we tell clients when AI was part of the work? Where do we land and why? Then name the hard line. What client or company information must never go into a tool we have not approved? Contracts, private client data, anything you would not email to a stranger. Validation. How do we confirm AI output is correct before it leaves the building? Treat it like a really eager assistant. Brilliant sometimes, confident always, and you still check the work every time. Protecting client information. More work going into these tools means more data leaving your walls. What actually protects your clients? Approved tools only, no exceptions, and a clear answer to where does this data go? A year from now. Where do we want to be with this in a year? What is the biggest opportunity and what is the biggest risk? This is where you cast the vision and let the room help build it. The rules of the hour. Post these before you start. Hold the room to them. No hype. Nobody sells the tool. We are talking about work, not magic. No fear. Nobody gets to shut it down with a horror story and no facts. Every excitement pairs with a guardrail. Every guardrail pairs with a permission. That last rule is the whole discipline in one line. If someone is excited about a use, name the check that keeps it safe. If someone raises a risk, name what people are still allowed to do. Excitement without a guardrail is how mistakes leave the building. A guardrail without a permission is how adoption dies. Close with the ask. End the hour with one question. Who wants more and on what? Write down every answer. More training, more use cases, more on a specific tool or a specific task. Do not filter the list in the room, just capture it. Here is what I have seen every time I have run this. The asks will run past what you expected to hear. People who came in quiet will name things they want to learn. That list is not a wish list. It is your training roadmap, written by the people who will actually use it. The conversation does not end AI adoption. It starts it. The demand you capture at the close is what you build next. The meeting close playbook. The last 10 minutes of a company-wide meeting are the most valuable real estate on the agenda. Most leaders spend them on logistics. They read the parking lot list, confirm the next date, and let the room drain out on housekeeping. The room remembers how the meeting ended, not how it ran. So end on meaning. Here is the practice. At every company-wide meeting, I close with one short leadership video chosen on purpose for one of three lanes. I tee it up with a single question. I play it. Then I run exactly three questions with the room and let people talk. The meeting ends on alignment, mindset, and engagement instead of on the calendar. It costs 10 minutes. it changes what people carry back to their desks. The logistics still get handled. They just move earlier, so the last thing in the room is a shared idea and not a scheduling note. What you put last is what the company thinks the meeting was about. Why the end, not the beginning? The end is where memory forms. Two mechanisms make this true, and they stack. The first is recency. In free recall, people remember the start and the end of a sequence best and the middle worst. Ebbinghaus, 1885, Murdoch, 1962. Glanzer and Kunitz, 1966, showed the catch. Fill the gap after the last item with a demanding task, even for 30 seconds, and the ending advantage disappears. So the video has to be the actual last thing, with no announcements bolted on after it. The second is evaluation. People do not average an experience. They judge it by its peak moment and its final moment. Kahneman, Fredrickson, Schreiber, and Rettelmeyer, 1993. Confirmed with medical patients by Rettelmeyer and Kahneman, 1996. Whatever lands last colors how the whole meeting is remembered. Persuasion works the same way on timing. When a decision follows a message with no gap, the most recent message carries the most weight, Miller and Campbell, 1959. The close is the message with no gap. Three more findings point the same way. Emotionally arousing material is consolidated into more durable memory than neutral material, McGaugh, 2004, which is why a moving 3 minutes outlasts a slide of numbers. A leader's mood spreads to the group, and the leader is the sender far more than the receiver, Barsad, 2002. So the tone you set in the closing minutes leaves the room in other people. And reflection after taking in content improves what people retain and do next. DiStefano, Gino, Pisano, and Stotts, 2014, which is why the questions come after the video, not before it. You are not adding a nice moment. You are placing the meeting's memory on purpose. The method, 6 steps. Pick the lane, growth, vision, or innovation. Choose the one the company actually needs this week, not the one you like best. Pick one video under 6 minutes. 1. Short enough that attention holds after a long meeting. Tee it with one question. Give people a reason to watch. A single lead in question turns passive viewing into looking for something. Play it. Full attention. No laptops, no side chatter, no talking over the open. The video gets the room. Run exactly 3 questions. Ask, then stop. Let silence do the work. The leader moderates, the room answers. Capture and carry. Write down what surfaces. Pull one theme into the next meeting so the practice compounds. When you want the room to act, close the discussion by naming when and where. A commitment tied to a specific time and place is far more likely to happen than a general good intention. Gallwitzer, 1999. Ask people to finish the sentence out loud. This week, in this meeting, or with this client, I will do this one thing. Rules of the practice. One video, never two. A second clip does not double the effect. It dilutes the first. Questions over commentary. You are not there to explain the video. You are there to open the room. The best close is the one where you talk least. Consistency beats novelty. Same slot, every meeting. People start to anticipate it, and anticipation is half the value. Rotate the lanes. Growth this month, vision next, innovation after. Read what the company needs and match it. If the team is discouraged, go growth. If people are heads down and have lost the bigger picture, go vision. If the work has gotten safe and stale, go innovation. Protect the silence. After each question, count to 5 before you fill the gap. The room will talk if you let it. Most leaders answer their own questions in 3 seconds and never find out what the room would have said. The starter library. 14 to begin with. Pick one, read the lead in aloud before you press play, then run the 3 questions. Growth. Failure. Nike ad, Michael Jordan. Ask before you press play, what failure has taught you the most? Then ask the room, how does his view of failure apply to our work? Where are we afraid to miss? How can we use failure as feedback instead of embarrassment? Grit, Angela Duckworth. Ask before you press play, what are you willing to stay with even when results are slow? Then ask the room, where do we give up too early? How can leaders support perseverance? What long-term goal needs more grit right now? Good, Jocko Willink. Ask before you press play. What recent problem could actually be useful? Then ask the room, what setback can we reframe as good? How does this mindset help under pressure? Where do we need to respond instead of react? Small habits and the two-minute rule, James Clear. Ask before you press play. What small habit would change your trajectory if repeated daily? Then ask the room, what habit should be simplified? Where do we make starting too hard? What tiny action could become a bigger system? The secret to giving great feedback, Leanne Renninger. Ask before you press play. Is our feedback helping people grow or just making them defensive? Then ask the room, how can we ask permission before giving feedback? What makes feedback specific enough to land? What feedback conversation are you avoiding? The Navy SEAL 40% rule, Jesse Itzler. Ask before you press play. When have you hit a wall and found more in the tank? Then ask the room, where are you on autopilot? How could the 40% rule change your work? What uncomfortable task would build resilience? Vision. Protect your dream scene, Will Smith. Ask before you press play. Who has told you what you cannot do, and did you believe them? Then ask the room, what dream needs protection right now? Whose limits are you carrying? What is one action toward that dream this week? Jump, Steve Harvey. Ask before you press play, where are you playing it safe instead of jumping? Then ask the room, what gift are you underusing? What risk are you avoiding? What would one real jump look like this week? Why we need to dream big, Lisa Nichols. Ask before you press play, where have you made your dream smaller to make other people comfortable? Then ask the room, where are you being too polite with your dream? What bold action would move it forward? Who benefits if you actually pursue it? A pep talk, kid president. Ask before you press play, what would you do if you believed the world needed your contribution? Then ask the room, what small, awesome action can you take this week? Where have you chosen the easy, boring road? Who needs encouragement from you right now? Innovation. How to start a movement, Derek Sivers. Ask before you press play, who helps turn a good idea into a movement? Then ask the room, where do we need more first followers? How can leaders make it easier for others to join? What idea needs public support right now? Build a tower, build a team, Tom Wujek. Ask before you press play, where are we over planning instead of testing? Then ask the room, what can we prototype this week? What slows us down when trying something new? How can feedback loops improve our work? The learn-it-all culture, Satya Nadella. Ask before you press play, are we acting like we already know or like we are still learning? Then ask the room, where do we see a know-it-all mindset? What would a learn-it-all culture look like here? How can leaders model curiosity instead of certainty? The Surprising Habits of Original Thinkers, Adam Grant. Ask before you press play, what idea did you kill too early because it was not polished? Then ask the room, where are we playing it too safe? How can we share ideas before they are perfect? What small experiment could we test this week? Close. Video links go stale in print. The method does not. Keep the living library with working links and new picks by Lane at scalewithheart.com. Start with one video and three questions at your next meeting. End on meaning and let the room carry it out the door. The first 90 days. This sequence comes from a real run. 29 managers, median 5 hours per week reclaimed. AI does not replace your leadership. It reveals where your leadership has gaps. Four phases, roughly 13 weeks, run them in order. Phase one, weeks one and two, hold up the mirror. You cannot free time you have not measured. Have every manager log their full week, task by task. Flag every task a capable AI helper could handle. Email, reports, meeting prep, templates. Total the flagged hours. Expect more than anyone believes. Name the skeptics. Every manager can point to theirs on day one. Write the names down. Phase two, weeks 3 to 5. Build the foundation. Give the team something to stand on before you ask them to build. Load your core company documents into a knowledge hub tool. Question it the way a new hire would. Ask the obvious things first. Teach the four pillars request formula below. Have every manager set up one AI tool aimed at their worst recurring task. The four pillars request formula. Four parts. Every strong request has all four. Persona. Who the AI acts as, defined by real expertise, not a job title. Task. The specific job stated as a finished outcome. Context. The situation, audience, and constraints that make it yours. Format. Exactly what the finished output looks like, so you edit instead of rework. Worked example, all four in one line. You are a veteran sales coach. Persona. Draft a 30-day ramp plan. Task for a new salesperson in a slow sales territory. Context as a one-page weekly checklist. Format. Drop any pillar and the output drifts. Keep all four and you edit instead of start over. Phase 3, weeks 6 to 9, coach from evidence. Stop coaching on gut, coach on what the numbers show. Build a performance diagnostician, raw performance data in, plain diagnosis out, coaching plan next. Feed it the real numbers for one direct report. Read the diagnosis, keep what fits, cut what does not. Generate a personalized coaching plan for every direct report, one at a time. Phase 4, weeks 10 to 13. Prove, then scale. Adoption is won by proof, not by mandate. Create one small win per manager. Fast, visible, undeniable. Aim each win at a pain the person actually owns. Publicize the wins internally. Let the result do the talking. The principle underneath the phase, force AI adoption and you get compliance. Demonstrate AI success and you get evangelists. The value math, run your own numbers. This is illustrative. Your figures will differ. The method will not. Underscore, 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 underscore managers times underscore, 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 underscore hours per week. Times dollar underscore 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 loaded rate times 48 weeks equals dollar underscore 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 annual run rate. Fill in what phase one surfaced. The flagged hours are already sitting in your business, unpaid and unrecovered. Three moves to make Monday. Have every manager log 1 week of tasks and star everything an AI tool could draft. The stars are hidden capacity. Load your 10 most asked documents into a knowledge hub and question it the way a new hire would. Find your loudest skeptic. Build one fast, visible, undeniable win on a pain they own. Start with the mirror. The rest follows. Choosing tools without marrying them. The tools change, the thinking does not. Every few months, a new assistant or platform passes the last one. If your business is wired to a single product, every leap forward becomes a rebuild. That is not leverage. That is a trap you pay for monthly. So stop shopping for products. Start designing in three parts. Buy the part, not the logo. Your edge is the system thinking, not the subscription. The three parts. One, your master file. This is where your client and business information lives. Names, jobs, history, money, notes. Pick this part for reliability and for ownership. You must be able to export everything in full at any time. If you cannot walk out with your own information, you do not own your business. You are renting it. Two, the connections that move information. These are the links and triggers that carry information between systems with no person in the middle. A new client fills out a form, and the record, the folder, and the first message all appear on their own. Pick this part for how many systems it reaches, not for how clever it looks. Three, the assistants that draft your work. These are the assistants and agents that draft, summarize, review, and prepare work for a human decision. They do the reading and the first pass. You keep the judgment. Pick this part for the quality of the draft and how fast you can swap it when a better one arrives. The operating principle. Design so any one part can be replaced without rebuilding the other two. Your information should not care which assistant reads it. Your connection should not break because you changed where a draft gets written. When the three parts are loosely joined, an upgrade is a swap. When they are fused into one product, an upgrade is a demolition. Never lock into one vendor. The moment a tool becomes the only way your business runs, you have handed it your pricing, your roadmap, and your exit. Do this now. Write down every tool you pay for, one line each. Sort each one into a part, your master file, the connections that move information, or the assistants that draft your work. Mark any tool doing the work of two parts. That is your risk. Fusion feels simple until you want to leave. For your master file, confirm you can export all of it today. If you cannot, fix that first. For each part, finish this line. If this tool doubled its price tomorrow, I would move to blank in blank days. Blanks mean exposure. Pick one fuse tool from step three and plan the split. Not this week, this quarter. The point. You are not buying software. You are building a structure that survives whatever launches next. The named recommendations move too fast for a printed page, so they do not live here. The current list lives at scalewithheart.com and stays current, so this book never goes stale. Check it. Pick for your parts and keep your thinking above your tools.